And with that, we welcome you into another edition of Sport Showdown. I'm Pete Dawson, joined alongside here by my partner, Scott Guyman, as we get ready for another exciting hour right now. We got the 7 to 8 o'clock block coming at you on WVBC AM here from Newton, Massachusetts. Going to be a really good episode for you tonight as we're going to talk about college basketball, college hockey, NHL hockey, some NBA. In the end, we might have the chance to sneak in a little bit of baseball as spring training's gotten started now. My Yankees won their first exhibition game on a walk-off dropped fly ball today. So, the game doesn't really matter, but I thought that was pretty exciting.
Hey, there's nothing more exciting than some great spring training ball. It really brings out the best competition in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got to start somewhere. You know, 30 teams, one goal, you got to get started right away. But with that, you know, some people are actually, like, in the middle towards the end of their season, so we should probably, like, really focus on that stuff. So we're going to get started by talking about some college basketball. The seasons is winding down before the playoffs. Conference tournaments are starting this week and into next week. But some really good games going on right now as seeding for conference tournaments gets underway. And we'll just take a quick look at the top 25 rankings right now. A lot of shuffling been going on this year, and Kansas is currently number one. You have Michigan State, Villanova, University of Virginia, Xavier, and Oklahoma after that. Oklahoma had a really close win last night against Baylor, a game that they were winning handedly by about 20 points in the first half, and they ended up blowing the lead before ultimately winning right at the end of the game yesterday.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of excitement here in the top rankings in NCAA basketball. I know another big game to note from last week was when Xavier beat and upset the number one ranked team, Villanova, at that time. A fantastic game there. Really winding it down before the madness begins. And we'll probably talk, you know, a good amount about the ACC tournament coming up, the ACC winding up as Boston College, yours truly, is in that conference.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring up Xavier, and yeah, they had a really good win last week against Villanova, and then they squandered a great opportunity to move up in the ranks by losing to Seton Hall on Saturday, or Sunday, one of those 2 days. But they definitely have a good team led by guys like Jalen Reynolds, Trayvon Blute, so they have some really good players that can get the job done. JP Makura is another one who he played really well in that game for Xavier when they knocked off Villanova. And Xavier is definitely a team that has to be valued in this tournament. You know, the Big East is not one of those Power Four conferences, but in basketball, while it might not be as lively as it used to be when it had teams like UConn, Syracuse, Louisville there, they still have Xavier, they have Butler, Villanova, Providence, Georgetown, teams that can definitely make the tournament and make a solid run. And even this year, Seton Hall looks like a team that has the possibility to make a deep run in the tournament the way they've been playing recently.
Yeah, and looking ahead for the remaining game on Xavier's schedule, they will take on Creighton at home this upcoming Saturday. But if you look at one of, I guess, Xavier's four losses throughout the season, it was against Creighton when they took on Creighton on the road. They lost 70-56. So this last game of the season is going to be huge for the Musketeers going into the tournament. It's kind of a make or break. You don't want to see a team losing to Creighton twice, but it's you never know what to expect. We know Creighton has a solid program. We saw a couple years ago, with the name escapes me, his father was the coach, McDermott.
Oh, yeah, Dougie McBuckets.
Yes, Doug McDermott. It was an outstanding player for Creighton. Now, he's no longer with them, but, you know, the Musketeers, this is a must-win, especially after that loss against Seton Hall.
Right, yeah, and Creighton's a good program. They're 18-11 right now, 9-7 in conference. The thing that Xavier needs to win this game because, I mean, just like you said, you cannot lose two times in a row to a team that's below you in the standings, especially within your own conference. And Xavier needs this game to kind of bounce back from a loss to Seton Hall earlier this week. Now, like I said, the Seton Hall Pirates are 21-7. They're 11-5 in conference, so sitting at third place in the conference right now. They're poised to make a run in the Big East tournament. I think people finally need to start buying into Seton Hall, myself included. I grew up when UConn was one of those teams that was in the Big East, so I followed them being from Connecticut. And every time we'd go play Seton Hall, we were trouncing them, and everyone was. They were at the bottom of the Big East Conference every single year, but now they've started to build a much stronger program. And this year, I think they have what it takes to even win this tournament. I would be surprised if Villanova or Xavier wasn't the team that pulled it out, but I've been pleasantly surprised by how good Seton Hall has been, coming off very, very strong wins.
Yes, a team that's definitely been on the rise in the past few years, and you know, looking for who's going to take the Big East come season end, you look at a team like Villanova, who sat in the number one spot in the nation just last week, and their remaining game is against Georgetown. Now, Georgetown not having a great year this year in the Big East, sitting at 14-16 overall, 7-10 within the conference, but if you look back at Villanova's schedule earlier in the year, they did beat Georgetown on the road, but only by a 5-point margin in a pretty low-scoring game. It was 55-50 in favor of Villanova. So do you think that Georgetown, despite their struggles this season, will put up a good fight against Villanova, maybe even taking them down, allowing Xavier to tie Villanova for the Big East Championship?
Yeah, you know, you definitely can't count out Georgetown. Georgetown's led by senior guard Devontae Smith-Rivera, who's been around for a long time. He's actually one of Georgetown's top five scorers all time. So he's a really good player, and he's the type of guy who, if he gets hot, he's going to be difficult to guard. Plus, he makes his teammates better when he's playing well. So while I think Villanova will win that game, Georgetown should not be counted out. I mean, in college basketball, there's always so much parity. And even though Georgetown's having a down season again, as they have for the past couple seasons, they're perfectly capable of beating Jay Wright's Villanova squad this year.
Definitely. And, you know, Georgetown always puts up a good fight regardless of where they are. They've historically been known as a basketball school. Look at the glory days with Allen Iverson, yeah. You know, bringing back good memories if you call those good memories. But surely the Big East, you know, as you said, not one of the Power Four, but a very competitive team in basketball, especially in recent years. Just look at some of the teams at the top here. Really can make a difference come tournament time.
Right. So, I mean, let's move on to these Big Four conferences. Let's start with the ACC, just because it's alphabetically first, so why not, you know. North Carolina's at the top, 24-6. They're followed by Miami, who's been on quite a run lately. After that, you have University of Virginia, who's been playing good basketball. Virginia had another win last night against Clemson, a good win for them. Louisville's after that. Louisville cannot make the postseason this year because of sanctions that they imposed on themselves. And then you follow that up with more of the middle of the pack, Duke, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh, and Syracuse. And then moving down, you have at the bottom our Boston College Eagles, Wake Forest, NC State, going up from 15th place. So, you know, I don't know. What do you make of the ACC at this point, Scott?
It is very competitive. Just look at the top half of the standings pool. These teams are all over 500. You have a lot of, you know, let's see, seven teams with single-digit losses, and that's always a good sign that you have a strong conference. And we knew this going into the season. We knew that North Carolina is a perennial, you know, top guy in the conference. But Miami is really surprising me. When you think of University of Miami, you don't think of a basketball school. You think of the Hurricanes on the football field. But they're really making a name for themselves in a conference that's usually topped by UNC, Virginia, or Duke. And, you know, you have to love seeing Duke sitting in fifth in the ACC. There's no better feeling, unless you're a Duke fan, because I feel like you're either a diehard Duke fan or you can't stand Duke.
Exactly. I mean, the thing that I see is, you know, yeah, Miami's been playing really well lately. Sheldon McClelland has been a force this year. Angel Rodriguez, their point guard, may be only around 5'9", 5'10", but he's a really good passer. He creates opportunities for the other guys on his team. And, you know, when I look at the ACC, I see eight teams that should make the tournament this year. You know, UNC, Miami, Virginia, Duke, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and Clemson should... I think they should all be in the tournament this year. I think that it would be a little bit of a disservice if the ACC didn't send eight teams to the tournament this year, which is a lot for any conference. But these are eight very solid teams. You know, Clemson's had some really good wins this year, and within conference, you know, a lot of teams started off slowly and have kind of put it together towards the end. Some teams are trending in opposite directions, but, you know, it's a really deep conference, and I think that it should be rewarded appropriately by the committee.
Yeah, you mentioned some of these teams trending in the opposite direction, and I think one of those teams is Pittsburgh. You know, based on their overall record, they look like a solid team, but if you look at their past, let's see, eight games, it looks like they've lost five games and won three. So they're 3-5 in their past eight. However, they are coming off of a 76-62 victory against Duke. So maybe they have a little bit of life in them right now, but come tournament time, I don't know if you can see Pitt going too far. They're a quality team, but I just don't know if they have the depth.
Yeah, you know, Pittsburgh, 20-8 on the year, but they're 9-7 in conference, which means they got a lot of their wins out of conference early in the year. And so that is definitely cause for concern when you talk about Pittsburgh. But I do think that they're perfectly capable of going on a run. You know, the ACC is a really tough conference to play in. And when you have to play every single team in conference, you're going to struggle against some of the teams at the top. You know, the North Carolinas, the Miamis, the Virginias, the same teams that we keep on talking about on and on again are the teams that are going to give fits to teams like Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Clemson that are middle of the pack teams. But I think that if Pittsburgh's able to make the tournament, like I believe that they should, based on how well they've performed at the beginning of the year and how difficult their strength of schedule is, they could certainly rattle off a couple wins if they get hot at the right time and if they're in a favorable region of the bracket.
Indeed, yeah, it really comes down to the placement in the bracket there, and I agree 100% with you. And I guess let's take a look at the potential ACC tournament bracket here. The tournament will kick off in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, this upcoming Tuesday, so next Tuesday, March 8th. And the 11th through the 14th seed will have those planned games, 14th seed being Boston College. And if the season were to end today, BC would take on the 11th team in the standings, so that would be
Georgia Tech.
You said Georgia Tech, yeah. And we saw BC play Georgia Tech the last week. In Georgia Tech, they looked solid. They're led by Marcus Georges Hunt, who completely dominated the game. I don't recall exactly how many points he scored, but every key drive to the hoop was Marcus Georges Hunt constantly getting fouled, constantly making both of those free throws. So he is going to be tough for the Eagles to match up against.
Yeah, you know, everyone's kind of tough for the Eagles to match up against. Boston College is, let's just throw some numbers at it. 7-22 overall, 0-16 in the conference, which equates to a 16-game losing streak. They're 0-9 on the road. So it's been a trying season for Boston College, to say the least. A young team that has been, I wouldn't call it decimated by injuries, but they've definitely lost some of their key guys to injuries, as A.J. Turner has gotten hurt, and who's our...
Jerome Robinson.
Right, Jerome Robinson, who was our second leading scorer. He got hurt, too. So that's a little bit of a problem right there. It makes you a lot thinner. It puts a lot of pressure on some of our other guys to get the job done offensively and defensively. And A lot of youth has had to emerge this year, which is good for the program moving forward, but does nothing for this year. And now Boston College, they play tonight against in North Carolina State, where they're 15-point underdogs, and then they close the regular season Saturday back here at Chestnut Hill against Clemson. So the thing for Boston College is that if they don't win one of these next two games in conference, BC is going to become the first school in the post-World War II era to not win a football or basketball game in conference in the whole season, the whole school year. And it definitely seems like that's the way Boston College is trending at this point, which is extremely unfortunate.
It is. It's been rough as a fan. You know, I guess it's much easier to lose all of your ACC football games than it is basketball, just in sheer numbers of how many games are played. But if you look at BC basketball and some of the games that they lost, so many of them were within reach, especially the game against North Carolina a couple weeks ago. BC had the lead for 35 minutes of that game, and they couldn't finish, and it's frustrating. In a couple of the other games, you know, against Georgia Tech, losing by five, but they hung with them the entire game and really just couldn't pull it off. And look at the game against Wake Forest. The BC lost 74-48. Wake Forest is a bad team if you look at the numbers. They're 2-16 within the conference, 11-19 overall. There should not be that 20-some point margin, that 26-point margin. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, Boston College really struggles on the road, and that game in Wake Forest was a road game. But, yeah, Boston College is, like I said before, a young team that's been hurt by some injuries. A lot of inexperience has really hurt the Eagles this year. And while it's provided a lot of minutes for young guys, it does nothing to help the team this year. And so, personally, I would be very surprised if they pulled out a win in one of these last two games. But, you know, crazier things have happened, especially in college basketball.
Right, yeah, you never know what's going to happen, and I guess you can't judge them until the games have been played. But let's look at the silver lining in this atrocious BC basketball team. So this is Coach Jim Christian's second year with the program, meaning that this year's freshman class is his first year of recruits that he personally brought in.
Right.
You look at guys like, as you mentioned, AJ Turner and Jerome Robinson. They were starters until they were injured. They were good players. They were hustlers.
Exactly.
That's two good players you have there. If you look at Matt Milan, he's a guy who put up 25 points a couple games ago. You have a lot of promise in him, a great outside shooter.
Right.
You have Sammy Barnes-Tompkins, who's stepped up tremendously the past few games. He hit, I think, 6 3-pointers in the game against Georgia Tech. Really, really great from beyond the arc. He's another guy who has a lot of potential at the point guard position. And let's see, Mesniak is also a freshman. He got some starting time against Georgia Tech. So I think there's promise with this program. It's once you bring in the Jim Christian regime and you slowly weed out the players that he personally didn't bring in, he'll have a better grasp of the team, and I think BC can be contenders come, you know, maybe 2 years from now. I think they can be middle of the pack in the ACC and really gain some ground. And I think they're going to have to use this season as a learning experience, see what went wrong, see how they can make minor improvements, which will translate into wins, because, as we said, so many games were within reach this season.
Right, absolutely. Now, I think, you know, Boston College, they definitely have a really bright future. When you talk about the youth that they've had, I mean, nine or 10 players on their team are freshmen or sophomores that have gotten playing time this year. And it's not just like they're getting a couple minutes off the bench. These guys are getting significant playing time. They're playing 25, 30 minutes a game because they have to. Boston College doesn't have anybody else. And when you get that experience that young as a freshman, and you stick around for 3-4 years, when you get to those third, fourth years, you're going to end up being Buddy Hield, Denzel Valentine, where you're a senior and now you've been around the game long enough and you've experienced ACC basketball for long enough that you're going to be in contention to be one of the top players in the country. You know, I'm not saying that that's a guarantee for some of these guys, but you look at, let's take Jerome Robinson, for example. He's probably the best freshman who was brought in. He was averaging 11.5 points per game, 11.6 points per game before he went down with an injury, which was second on the team. And any time as a freshman, you're averaging double-digit points in a game. That's really impressive, and that's something you don't see that often with college basketball players, unless they're really good players, like you have someone like a Ben Simmons or a Brandon Ingram at Duke, who are first and second round picks projected in the NBA draft this coming season.
Yeah, and I guess looking at the program as a whole, unless your team's like Duke or Kentucky or North Carolina, it's very tough to build a program that is exceptional year in, year out. You have to understand that in college sports, you're having constant turnover. You can only have, at max, 4 years with a player. So you cannot expect a team to be as strong as some of the other teams every year. And of course, a 7-22 season and 0-16 in the ACC is unacceptable, but you can't dwell on the past. We have to move forward and look and see the future of this Eagles team, because there is potential. And if all the fans and the supporters of college basketball just rule them out already, that's just not logical. You have to give these guys a chance. You have to give them time to develop. And I think this season was a great experience for those younger guys, as you mentioned, to develop, to get experience playing against some of the top ACC teams, the best players in college basketball, really learning what they can do, how they can mimic that play, and really use the offseason this upcoming summer and really improve on their game.
Right, absolutely. Now, we're going to switch over and talk about a little hockey. Before we do, I'll give you the dates for some of these big conference tournaments. The ACC tournament is going to be March 8th through the 12th. You have the Big East, March 9th through the 12th. The Big Ten, March 9th through the 13th. Let's see, what else do we have here? All right, I'll give you one more. You have the Pac-12, March 9th through the 12th as well. And then you have like all the other mid majors are mixing in along the same time frame, and then on Sunday, March 13th, that's going to be Selection Sunday. So then when we come back a couple days later, March 16th will be that Wednesday when we have our show. We'll be doing our annual bracket projections. We'll have our siren out for our upset alerts. So it's a blast. It's probably one of our favorite days on the show all year. So definitely look forward to that when we come back from break.
Oh yeah, tournament time is always a blast, because you never know what's going to happen. You get some bowl projections. You get to hear the upset alert. What more could you ask for from Sports Showdown?
Exactly. I mean, the only other thing we could do is bring on Scott Hill. That would be the only way to make it crazier.
He is an NCAA professional, so we may have to have that happen.
Yeah, I mean, why not? We'll look into getting that done for you guys. For those of you who don't know, I mean, Scott Hill is a living legend in WCBC Sports, and he's somebody who he can go on for hours and hours talking about sports, and he'll never disappoint you with his takes. So he could be somebody who makes a guest appearance on this show coming up.
No promises yet, but there's potential.
Scott, if you're listening to this, just send us a text message. We want you on our show.
All right, switching gears to NCAA hockey, we're going to talk a little bit mostly about Hockey East, just because of the Eagles' position in Hockey East. And actually, the regular season just wrapped up for men's hockey. Boston College tied Providence for the Hockey East Championship, so either they're going to have to break the trophy in half, or they're going to have to learn how to share, because there is no clear winner. Both teams have been dominant throughout the entire season, and so BC and Providence will have byes in the opening round of the Hockey East playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Boston College right now is playing really good hockey. They're number third in the nation this week. They were number two last week, but a loss to UMass Lowell on Saturday kind of forced the committee to drop them one rank. Not that it really matters at this point. Quinnipiacs continue to dominate. They're at the top, but they're not a Hockey East team, so we'll stay away from that part of the discussion. But like you said, Boston College and Providence are knotted at the top of the Hockey East standings. Boston College 15-2-5. for 35 points. Providence 16-3-3 for 35 points. Both teams with 22 games played. Boston College 91 goals for, 45 goals against. This is in conference. And Providence 71 goals for, 39 goals against. So really balanced teams. And then you add in Notre Dame, who's the third place team, and they're right behind. They have 15 wins as well. They have 32 points. And I watched them play a game against BU, and, you know, they have a very good team. BU's goaltender, McGuire, who limited Boston College to one goal in that Beanpot game, he's been unbelievable this year. I mean, especially in the month of February, he's had a very, very strong February. He looked really good against Notre Dame this past weekend. So it's going to be an extremely competitive Hockey East tournament, just like it always is.
Oh, exactly. And as we said, Boston College will have the bye in the first weekend. So their first game in the Hockey East tournament will not come until Friday, March 11th. And that will be a best-of-three series held here at Conti Forum. The opponent is to be determined based on this weekend's results. We have games between New Hampshire and Merrimack, Maine and Northeastern, Vermont and UConn, UMass Amherst and BU. And those are all the opening round games. So it looks like BC, Providence, Notre Dame, and UMass Lowell will all have buys this first weekend.
Right, and I don't know, who are you most afraid of playing as a Boston College Eagle? You know, we haven't seen Providence in a while. We haven't played them in a long time, so it's hard to judge them. You know, Notre Dame always plays Boston College tough. BU is a huge rival. Those games always end up being close, no matter how up or how down a certain team is. UMass Lowell, we split with them this weekend. And Northeastern has been playing really good hockey lately. I don't know the exact numbers of how many they've won in a row, but their month of February, ever since losing in the first round of the Beanpot, they've had an extremely strong month of February. So they're coming on strong, and they're sixth in Hockey East. Those top six are all teams that you see the potential to beat Boston College on any given day.
You're right. Northeastern, you know, a team that had a pretty rough start to the season, really, really doing well their past several games. A sweep in a series against Maine, a sweep at Connecticut, a sweep against UMass, a win against Harvard, a tie against UMass Lowell. Pretty respectable results. If you look, you see a lot of W's in their column. I think the team that's going to pose the biggest threat to BC is Notre Dame. And the reason I have for that is the game in early December in which Notre Dame came here to Chestnut Hill, mm-hmm. BC had a 3-1 lead with about 8 minutes left in regulation. And Notre Dame was able to tack on three goals in those 8 minutes and win 4-3. It just a huge turnaround in momentum, and it really shows you that anything can happen in college hockey. You can't get confident and comfortable with a 3-1 lead in the third period, because if you lack the pressure just a smidgen, anything can happen. And I think Notre Dame has a lot of great leadership behind goalie Cal Peterson, and there's just a lot of depth in that program. I think Coach Jeff Jackson really knows how to lead a team and proves that they can compete with anybody in Hockey East.
Yeah, you know, I think that the biggest challenge for Boston College is probably going to be the Providence Friars. You know, you look at Providence, and we already know they're tied for first place with Boston College. But the thing is, Boston College is where they are where they are because of their great goaltending. Thatcher Demko's had an unbelievable season. He plays every single game, every single minute for Boston College, and he's able to limit teams to one goal a game, two goals a game tops, and usually BC is able to score a lot more than that. But when you look at Providence, they're giving up about the same number of goals per game as Boston College is, and that's going to put a lot more pressure on Demko, and it's going to put a lot more pressure on the offense to be able to sneak a couple past Providence and give Boston College a win in that game. So I think in terms of defense, these two teams are very, very evenly matched, and that right there sets up a tough matchup for Boston College in the Hockey East tournament should those two teams have to play each other. Based on the bracket, I believe it would only be in the championship game.
Okay, yeah, and you know, just we know BC, and come playoff hockey time, it's a brand new season, and many things can happen. We saw our freshman year 2 seasons ago went down in the Frozen Four against Union with that lethal team we had with Johnny Gaudreau, Kevin Hayes, and Bill Arnold on that top line, and it shows, you know, all the skill that you have come playoff time is you start from scratch, and really it shows who has the momentum. It's very similar to the NCAA basketball tournament. It's really who can find their niche that late in the season despite the injuries, despite the fatigue, and really capitalize on those wins.
Right, exactly. You know, and BC definitely has one of the stronger teams in recent memory. That team you talked about 2 years ago was absolutely unreal. That top line was so good. But I think that this team is deeper than that team was. I think when you look at lines 1 through 4, 1 through 5, however many Jerry York decides to go with on a given night, you know, Boston College it has scorers and it has strong defensive presence all the way up and down the lines. And I think that's something that was missing from some of the past teams where everyone knew about the Johnny Gaudreau line. But beyond that, the lines just weren't nearly as deep as what you see this year. I think that Jerry York's done a great job bringing in a lot of talent, and the program continues to speak for itself. And because of that, you know, you get a team that has players 1 through 35 that are all capable of really helping BC win a championship.
Indeed, and what's promising about that especially is the age of some of the top players. If you look at the sophomore class, the freshman class, you have guys like Colin White, Miles Wood, Zach Sanford, Alex Tuck. These guys have a couple more years if they decide to stay, so that's promising for the years to come. And even now, BC has a great team, and I think they have, you know, a great chance to get to the Frozen Four.
Yeah, you know, they always say the time is now, and that certainly rings true for Boston College this year. I think this team has a really strong chance to make the Frozen Four, and to even go further than that and win this whole thing this year. This team is really strong, really deep.
I agree with you on that. And quick side note on BC hockey here. If you were listening to the show 2 weeks ago, Pete and I discussed how it would be cool if BC had more interleague games against some teams out in the Midwest, like Miami University or, you know, the University of Michigan, more often. And great news came out that BC will play North Dakota at Madison Square Garden on December 3rd, 2016 in what will be called the College Hockey Showdown. It'll feature a couple of interleague games, and, you know, I think this is great for BC. It brings, you know, two premier hockey teams into the largest market in the United States for a showdown. It's close enough driving distance from Boston here, and I think that's going to be great. I think if you can get a lot of students to go support the Eagles, it'll be great for college hockey.
Yeah, you know, Scott doesn't want to brag, but I think that we're the ones who kind of made that possible with our banter 2 weeks ago about getting more games played between non-conference opponents. So definitely we're going to pat ourselves on the back for this one. But in all seriousness, this is definitely a great thing for college hockey, and it's going to put it on the front lines, no pun intended, because all right, the pun was kind of intended. All right, but yeah, it's going to put it like in the forefront of everyone's mind when you see teams like this playing at Madison Square Garden. You know, that's going to be a lot of hype surrounding that, even if it's a non-conference game. That's something that's going to be a ton of fun. So definitely something I look forward to, and hopefully I'll be able to take that trip down there and watch that game.
Yeah, it'd be great right after Thanksgiving break, you know, right before finals. It'd be a great time to take a bus trip down to the city. And
maybe we'll have the call for it, you know.
Oh, very true. That'd be great. How awesome would it be to broadcast a game live from the world's most famous arena?
Exactly. From Madison Square Garden, that'd be unreal. All right, we're going to make that our goal for next year. Don't tell anybody because we want to do it.
So I guess just mark off your calendars right now. You'll be listening to Pete and Scott December 3rd live from MSG.
Shout out to whoever's here engineering. All right. Let's talk about some NHL.
Sounds good.
All right, who do you want to start with for the NHL? Start in the
Ooh.
East again?
Let's switch it up this time. Let's
Start in the
start in the
West?
West. We'll keep our fans on their feet. We'll take a look at the standings here. Let's take a look at the. One sec, let me filter by conference. We'll take a look at the Western Conference here. Sitting atop in a three-way tie, we have the Chicago Blackhawks, Dallas Stars, and St. Louis Blues, all with 83 points apiece. And we have about 18 or so games left on the schedule, depending on how many each team has played. So we're almost three quarters the way through the season. This is where it's kind of make or break time between these teams, but we see a bit of a gridlock here for the top of the Western Conference. What's your take on who do you think's going to surge forward come the remaining quarter of the season?
Yeah, this is unbelievable. You got three teams all tied with 83 points. Right now, the Blackhawks only have 64 games played, while the Stars have 65 and the Blues have 66. So the Blackhawks have a slight advantage there if you want to look at games played to points ratio. But with that being said, I really like the Blackhawks. I mean, they have the most balanced team, they have the most experience. Patrick Kane is having one of those seasons that you just you can't believe. When you talk about how many points this guy has, he literally has 20 more points than the person who's in second place behind him. It's unreal. Plus the fact that the Blackhawks have been they're very strong on defense, only 153 goals against this year, whereas the Stars have 189. The Stars have also been kind of falling on harder times lately, 3-5-2 over their last 10, a four-game losing streak. I like the Blackhawks to win the Central Division there.
I'll agree with you. I mean, it's hard not to agree with you with the dynasty that they've built there in Chicago. Stanley Cups in 2010, 2013, and 2015. They still have their strong young core of players, and there's just a lot of excitement in Chicago. It's when you put Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane on a team, the leadership that they display on the ice is just incredible. They play with such finesse and they just feel so comfortable, and that's what you need in a team. You need guys who will go out there day in, day out and just score points. That's all you need to win. You need to score. And that's exactly what the Blackhawks are doing. And they have some competition, as we see. It's the bit of the gridlock, but whoever comes out on top at the season's end is your clear winner.
Yeah, and even when you look at the rest of that, the rest of the Central Division right there, the Preds have 75 points, the Wild and the Avalanche both have 68 points. If those two teams were moved into the Pacific Conference, they'd be right there in the thick of things. Here they're a little bit behind because the Blackhawks, Stars, and Blues are all having such strong seasons. But the Blackhawks definitely have the most balanced team, the deepest team, and I think that they have the advantage from that standpoint. But the Stars, you cannot count the Stars out because they're the best offensive team in the NHL. They're just ahead of the Capitals with 209 goals scored this year. They have really lethal scorers, and that's something that has continued to get the job done for them all year. Since November, we've been talking about how the Stars are putting up a lot of points, and their goaltending, their defense hasn't been fantastic at all. 189 goals against, which is right there with teams that are at the bottom of the division, but they score enough points to get the job done. And when you can score the way they can score, it's going to be a tough day for anyone to keep up with them.
Oh, right. And looking at the overall points leaders, sitting behind Patrick Kane in second and third place, you have two Dallas Stars, Jamie Benn, 32 goals, 39 assists, totaling 71 points. And right behind him, Tyler Seguin, 32 goals, 36 assists, 68 points. So whenever you see two teammates in the top three scoring, you have a potent offense. And I think those guys could propel Dallas deep into the playoffs. As Dallas is a team that we haven't seen too much of in the playoffs in recent years, ever since probably Mike Modano left the Dallas Stars. They haven't really seen much success. They've kind of been a team that didn't have a great fan base, primarily based on location. Come on, how big is hockey in Dallas? But I think it's good for the sport when you have a good team in a smaller hockey market. You know, it promotes awareness about the sport, brings in more fans to cheer on the team, and I think it's great for the sport overall in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, staying out west but shifting over to the Pacific Division, it's not a shock again to see the Kings at the top. You know, along with the Blackhawks, the Kings have kind of been the dynasty team in the NHL for the past half a decade to a decade right now. And they sit at the top with 78 points, followed closely by the Ducks with 76 and the Sharks with 74. So those three teams are going to continue to duke it out for seeding at the top of the Pacific Conference. And, you know, the Ducks, they're coming on really strong right now. You know, they're looking like the Mighty Ducks almost, you could say, as they're 9-0-1 over their in their last 10 with an 8-game winning streak. You know, maybe they're running the Flying V out there or something like that.
Hey, they must be doing something, or they must have switched something up mid-season, because I remember at the beginning of the NHL season, maybe 2-3 weeks in, they were at the bottom of the division, and we said, you know, what is wrong with the Ducks? They have guys like Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaf, two of the, you know, the most powerful offensive players in the game, and just not translating into wins. But boy, have they taken a turnaround. As you mentioned, an 8-game winning streak. They're taking on Montreal tonight. And we'll touch on Montreal in a little bit, but that's a team that just hasn't had much success since the beginning of the season. So Anaheim really doing what they need to propel themselves into a guaranteed playoff spot, and really trying to capitalize on the team that's sitting one county away in Los Angeles.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, Frederik Andersen at the beginning of the year really struggled. Since then, their goaltending has gotten a lot better. They've been able to couple that in with some good goal scoring, and you know, that gives you that momentum to ride out from the bottom of the division back up to the top. And that's been huge for the Ducks this year. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they snuck past the Kings. You never know if the Kings kind of get complacent up at the top, and now all of a sudden they got to turn it back on because they see the Ducks coming in hard in their rearview mirror. So I wouldn't be surprised in the least to see the Ducks surpass the Kings.
Oh, it could very easily happen, I agree, especially with the momentum that the Ducks have right now. I would love to see a playoff series between LA and Anaheim. I think that would be nuts. That would be heated.
Yeah, two pretty evenly matched teams right there. And obviously two teams that don't like each other just because they're playing in, you know, Anaheim and LA are virtually the same place. I'm not a geography expert, especially when it comes to California, but I know that they're right in the same like city. So definitely a budding rivalry there.
Oh, indeed. And taking a quick look at the bottom of the barrel in the Pacific Division, a quick note on the Edmonton Oilers. Connor McDavid, the rising phenom that everybody in the league has been talking about. He was injured for probably a couple months earlier in this season after he crashed into the end boards and broke his collarbone. But the Oilers actually played the Buffalo Sabres last night in Buffalo, which featured Connor McDavid versus Jack Eichel, the two top picks in the NHL draft this past season. In no other way to end this game than in overtime, the game tied 1-1. The Buffalo Sabres had the puck in their defensive zone. The Sabres win the faceoff. Jack Eichel takes the puck, basically coast-to-coast, has some great maneuvers, takes a shot on the Edmonton goalie. It goes a bit wide. None other than Connor McDavid picks up the puck and rushes, and I emphasize rushes, down the ice. The speed on this kid is incredible, and takes the goal backhanded past the Buffalo goaltender to really shove it in the Buffalo fan base's face and wins the game in overtime, saying, "Buffalo, you missed out on me in the NHL lottery."
Yeah, you know, just crazy stuff right there. And you talk about the future faces of the NHL. And from the little bit we've seen from Connor McDavid this year when he hasn't been injured, he's been a human highlight reel. This guy is extremely fast. He has great puck skills. He plays like he's been in the league for 5, 6, 7 years. You know, he knows exactly what needs to get done, and he does a good job. And, you know, Jack Eichel's quietly had a very good season, too. He doesn't generate nearly as much hype as Connor McDavid does, which is probably just a product of the team that he's been playing for. But these two guys are going to be around for a long time, and they're creating a matchup that everyone's going to want to see for years to come.
Oh, that's for sure. It's always great to have new stars. It's almost like 10 years ago when you had Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin. And staying with Ovechkin, his team's not doing all that bad right now.
Yeah, you know, the Capitals have been unreal this year. When you talk about 96 points, which is more than enough to put them in first place in all of the NHL, 13 points up on the next closest team. The Rangers started the season off extremely strong, and then since the beginning of November, the Capitals have gone on a roll that hasn't stopped. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They have 46 wins, 12 losses, 4 overtime losses. This team is almost unbeatable. You know, Braden Holtby's been really strong in goal, and we talked about a couple weeks ago how in the past 3-4 seasons, he's gotten progressively better each year that he's been in the league. Alexander Ovechkin continues to have about a point every night, if not more than that. You know, he's a veteran who still knows how to get it done. He's extremely fast, extremely physical, and he's got one of the hardest slap shots I've ever seen. And, you know, the Capitals, they've added a lot of depth this year, and it makes them the favorite to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Yeah, and I certainly think that combining Alexander Ovechkin's offensive prowess with Braden Holtby's unstoppable goaltending speaks directly to their plus 61 goal differential. They've forced 205 goals and only given up 144, and that differential leads any other team in the NHL by, what's 61 minus 27? It's 34.
Don't make me do math on this show.
34. So they have 34 of a 34-point differential higher than the second-place team. So really it shows that their competition is really mismatched, and they're really showing that they are going to be a Stanley Cup contender for the first time in, I don't know if the Capitals have ever won a Stanley Cup, but I know in the Alexander Ovechkin era, they certainly haven't made it too far in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, going right below them, you have my New York Rangers, who have been playing much better lately. You know, I talked about it a couple weeks ago. They started the season very strong, hit December, and the wheels kind of fell off the train and derailed them for a little bit, if you want to just carry out that metaphor right there. But so for 2 months, they kind of just kept their heads above water while the Capitals blew past them. Now in February, they've turned it on again. Henrik Lundqvist is back playing the type of hockey that everyone's come to expect out of him, and which puts him in the conversation for best goaltender in the league every single year. So that's a strong positive for the Rangers. The problem with the Rangers is their power play ranks both on the kill and on the power play. They're something like 23rd on the kill and 26th on the power play. And, you know, they've never been a great power play team, but last year they had gotten up to around 13th in the league, I believe. This year, back towards the bottom of the pack, and it's frustrating anytime you have an odd man advantage like that. You need to be able to capitalize, and the Rangers have struggled to do that all year. Plus the fact that their defense has struggled to stop teams when they're shorthanded. So the Rangers need to be able to figure that out and get back on track if they want to make a run to the Stanley Cups and contest with the Capitals, who have been dominant so far this season.
In recent trade news for the New York Rangers, how about that pickup from the Carolina Hurricanes of Captain Eric Staal, brother of now teammate Mark Staal? You know, he's been a captain of the Carolina Hurricanes for 12 years, spent his entire career there, and he was traded for a second-round pick in 2016 and 17 and a Finnish prospect. So do you think that Eric Staal will bring that veteran leadership now? He was on the team when they won the Stanley Cup in 2006, I believe it was, but they haven't had a whole lot of success since. But I think as an individual player, he's going to have a big impact on this team. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I really like this trade for the Rangers. I didn't think that they gave up too much for it. I actually thought they were going to have to give up a little more when I heard the rumor that they were going to make a deal for Staal. So I like that he's able to come in, join his brother, and hopefully that's going to add a new dimension to his career. And I think that it's going to be a key factor to helping the Rangers have success towards the stretch run here as we go through March.
Yeah, and when you hear 12 years in the league, you think he's probably a pretty old, washed-up player now. He's only 31, so if you look at Jaromir Jagr, who's 44, it looks like Eric Staal could have some good years ahead of him, seeing if he fits in with that chemistry. Maybe it'll help that his brother's on the team, but you know, I think that was the right move for the Rangers at this point. They want to push towards the playoffs, and I think he was the asset they were looking for.
Yeah, you know, the Rangers over the past couple of years have always been in that position in the one or two seed in their division, looking to add somebody at the trade deadline. A couple of years ago, they dealt Ryan Callahan to the Lightning, and then they get Marty St. Louis for that. And last year, they make the deal to acquire Keith Yandle as a defenseman who has the ability to score, and he's been an asset for the Rangers. And then this year, you make the deal for Staal. Now, you know, in the past 2 years, the trades have worked out pretty well for the Rangers, and so they're hoping that this one will work out too, and I think that it will. Plus the fact that the Rangers are expecting to get Rick Nash back in 10 to 14 days. He hasn't played since getting hurt, I believe, around January 20th to 27th, somewhere in that week. So things starting to fall in place for the Rangers. If they can continue to put it all together, I think that they have a really strong chance to make a run to the Stanley Cup again, as they have in the past couple seasons.
And we'll definitely keep an eye on the Rangers and, you know, the other status of these teams in the NHL as it comes playoff time. You know, in the last several minutes of the show, do you want to flip it over to maybe split between the NBA? We'll talk about one of the top players in the league, and then maybe a little bit of MLB.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, I guess starting off with the Warriors and the Thunder game from Saturday night, just an absolutely incredible game. The Warriors with the 121-118 win in overtime in one of the best NBA games I've ever seen. The Warriors got down early. Down by a fair amount, you know, double-digit points. But knowing the Warriors, you kind of assume that they're going to come back. And then they kind of stayed down for the whole game. Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook played really well for the Thunder, continued to carry them. Steph Curry got hurt in the middle of the game, rolling his ankle on a basket. And then, you know, he comes back, eventually leads them to a tie score. The Thunder come back, and then the Thunder are up two, and the Warriors have the ball towards the end of the game, and Kevin Durant fouls Andre Iguodala shooting a jumper. So Andre Iguodala goes to the line and makes both free throws to force overtime, and then in overtime, Kevin Durant fouls out. The Warriors are able to keep the game at 118-118, and then Steph Curry pulls up for a 32-foot jump shot and buries it just like he always does. And one of the most, you know, I can't even call it unbelievable anymore, because every time he shoots the ball, I pretty much expect it to go in. So I guess it's one of the more unbelievable moments.
I guess you can say that. Yeah, it's really been wild just seeing what he can do on the court. Just in, I don't know if it was his last game played or 2 games ago, he broke the NBA record for most 3-point shots made in a season, a record that he formerly held. He actually held the top 2 spots. Now he holds the top 3 with 288 3-pointers on the season, and there's still a third of the season to go. He could reach, as you said, we're talking about before the show, he could reach upwards of 400
exactly,
3-pointers.
Yeah. Projections were, if he continued at the same pace, he's projected to get around 420 threes made this year. Plus, he has the record for most consecutive games played making a 3-point shot. He passed Kyle Korver the other day for that record. And just during all this, the Warriors have the best record in the NBA. They're on pace to pass the 95-96 Bulls. One of those mid-90s Bulls teams has the best record ever in the NBA, and the Warriors are currently on pace to pass that and set the new record for all-time winningest team in the NBA regular season.
Fun fact, Steph Curry and LeBron James were born in the same hospital in Akron, Ohio.
That is a fun fact. That's something I had no idea about.
Who knows if that hospital has produced other great NBA talents, but I guess we'll have to find out.
You know, if you want your kid to go to the NBA, you might as well just head out to Akron and give birth, because that could be, you know, it could be something there. Maybe like a nurse there has the Midas touch, I guess. I don't know.
We could see both of those players go head-to-head for the second year in a row in the NBA Finals. Who do you think's going to make it to the NBA Finals?
It definitely seems like a strong possibility that we're going to see that rematch. But the Raptors are a strong second-place team in the Eastern Conference, and they were able to beat the Cavaliers the other night. Kyle Lowry put on a show in that game, going for, I believe, 43 points that night. And then in the West, you have the Spurs, who only have 9 losses on the year. They're 4 games back of the Warriors. They're perfectly capable of winning a series against the Warriors. And, you know, I still have to stick with my guns and say the Cavs are going to play the Warriors in a rematch, but I could definitely see the Raptors making it. I could definitely see the Spurs. I could definitely see the Thunder making it. You know, there are opportunities for other teams to come out of these conferences than just what it seems like on paper.
Yeah, I think the Western Conference playoffs will be slightly more interesting to watch than the Eastern Conference. I'll give you that.
All right, so that's pretty much going to do it for our show this week. Next week is spring break, so we're not going to be here. But when we come back, like we said, we're going to do our annual breakdown of the March Madness bracket. So that'll take up our whole show in 2 Wednesdays from now. And then after that, we'll be pretty deep into spring training. We'll probably get ready for our baseball preview. Plus, we'll have a Hockey East tournament, more from the NCAA men's basketball tournament, basketball, NBA and NHL finishing up their regular season and moving towards the playoffs. So this is a great time for sports and a lot to get to in the next couple weeks when we get back from spring break.
Yeah, that's for sure. A lot of excitement going on. And I guess to end off the show, here's to BC making it far in the ACC tournament.
I guess so, you know. Shout out, Boston College basketball. Thank you to all our very valued listeners. And this has been WZBC Sports Showdown. For Scott Guyman, I'm Pete Dawson, saying so long.